Live from the John Lovitz Theater on Universal City Walk, it's An Evening with Adam West. And here's your host for tonight, Ralph Garman.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for coming out to the John Lovitz Theater tonight for An Evening with Adam West. I've been on a lot of stages in my life, a lot of times. I've never been this nervous. I've been waiting my whole life to have this conversation we're going to have tonight. I realized when I was researching for tonight that it was a stupid idea for me to try to condense this man's life and career into 2 hours, but we're going to do the best we can. We got a lot to cover, so I'm not going to chat for very long up here, but I do want to say thank you to everyone who came out tonight. Sold out crowd tonight here at the Lovitz. And the reason we're doing this is, of course, because Adam West has finally going to receive his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And so all the proceeds from tonight's show are going to go to pay for that. And so thanks so much. Ladies and gentlemen, the man, the icon, the legend, please put your hands together and welcome Mr. Adam West.
Just stand here for a moment.
You're going to do some stand-up?
And let you admire my incredible crime-fighting physique. You know, it's really fun to be at the John Lovitz Theater.
Yes.
John and I went to elementary school together.
He was a couple years ahead of you, wasn't he?
Well, no. I was 30. I was a little retarded, Ralph. But he went to school with my son, Hunter Anderson. Hunter, are you sitting here?
Yeah.
Where are you? There they are, Hunter and Susan. Anyway, I saw John upstairs, and he's always been one of my favorite guys and extremely funny, as you know. Ralph, I've done... Are you ready?
I am.
Oh, I thought you weren't ready. I've done three of John's shows, The Critic and Radio News, Saturday Night Live. So I'm just delighted that John has this theater, and I have a chance to be here with Ralph Garman.
Thank you, Adam.
Who's seen every one of my films.
Oh, several times. Especially
thanks,
Happy Hooker Goes to Washington. That's one of my favorites.
Okay, yeah. I'm out.
Oh, come on. Well, let's get started, shall we? We got a lot to talk about, Adam. September 19th, 1928. Does that date ring a bell?
No.
Oh, well, that's the day you were born in Walla Walla, Washington.
No.
Yes.
I was born. People get this very mixed up.
Okay.
Is the evening going like this? It's going to be this way?
Probably. It's probably a lot of misinformation
really
on my
mixed
part.
Up.
Yes.
No, I was born in Seattle, but very.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but then we went to Hollywood because my mother had a contract to. Sing opera, amazingly. And then, my brother came along, and we decided to go back to Walla Walla. My dad was a rancher. And they said, well, we're going to give up on Hollywood and go back to farming and ranching because we got a kid here that's so immensely talented.
I think we have a picture of you. I think we have a baby picture of you, Adam.
Oh, no.
There we go.
Is that a good lead-in?
There you go. Look at that.
Oh, I'm impressed. My God, my mother.
How adorable are you?
Well, look at Joan Crawford.
And your mom was an entertainer, too. She was a singer, right?
Well, she was. She was a concert pianist and singer. and she was queen of the Pendleton Roundup, for God's sakes.
Wow.
Does that make her kind of, you know, something sort of talented, I guess?
Yeah.
And can you hear me with this thing down here?
No, you want to hold it?
I think I better.
Yeah, you might want to hold it.
Hello there.
And your mom was sort of the center of the showbiz entertainment community there in Walla Walla, right? Didn't she entertain a lot of celebrities as they came through town?
Yeah, pretty much. And my dad, you know, my dad was a farmer, and she really, she was quite different from your ordinary 4-H wife, Ferris Farmerette. In that evidently she knew and other people knew of her, and so she used to entertain a lot of, you know, stars and people who came through Walla Walla during that time.
Right.
So I used to lean through the banister upstairs and watch these people having a hell of a time downstairs and thinking, oh, boy, there's a big life out there. Maybe I could get a little of the taste of this.
Now, how old were you when your folks split up?
I was, I think, 14.
And then you moved to Seattle, right, with your mom and stepdad?
Yes, I moved to Seattle.
You went to Lakeside, right?
Lakeside School. It was Boys Town.
Meaning it was...
It was a school for boys at that time.
Was it tough, disciplinary-wise?
Yes, it was very difficult, but better than the later reform school.
Yeah. What kind of student were you? Did you do sports? Were you a brain? What were you like in high school?
I was really a dweeb, Ralph. You know, I did a lot of stuff. Like, I was a 3-year letterman, you know, and so on in sports. And I used to ride horses, chase cattle, ride... you know, break horses and whatever. But I look like a total dweeb. And when I got to Hollywood, I couldn't understand that Warners would give me a contract because I looked like a dweeb.
I think we have a picture of you from college, I think. If you want to see what a dweeb Adam was in college, I think we have a college picture of him here.
Oh.
This is Adam from Whitman College.
Looks so gay.
Whitman College in Seattle. What was your major at Whitman? Do you remember?
Yes.
What was it? You want to share that with us?
Well, yes, okay. I majored in English Lit and Psychology.
Psychology?
Yeah, I think really if you want to do something as an actor, a producer, director, something in this business of ours, I think it's important to read and, you know, English Lit, whatever. Just read, read, read.
Did you know in college you wanted to perform? Was that the plan?
Well, in the last year of college, I got a job at the local radio station. And I did everything there. I swept the floors. Oh, I did the Sunday morning religious shows. And it was always great with a Saturday night hangover to come in with nothing but a trench coat on over and do the religious shows. But nobody ever knew.
Now, your senior year at Whitman, you got married, right?
Yes.
That's young, Adam. That's too young to be
it
married.
It is. I was too young. God love you, Ralph. I was too young to be up here. I was too young to be married.
As you said, you worked in radio. You went to Stanford for a while for graduate school, right?
Yeah, I did. I lasted about 6 weeks at Stanford.
What happened there?
Well, I got a job.
Oh, that's better.
At a time when nobody was working, and I got lucky, and I won an audition, and I got a job.
Doing what?
Well... I went to the McClatchy Network in Sacramento, California.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they have a chain of newspapers, radio, TV stations. And I got a job there writing and voicing a couple of shows. And, you know, the ex-heavyweight champ of the world, the late Max Baer, not Junior, you know, who was on the TV show, but Max Baer Sr., when I was really young, I was assigned to handle the world champ.
And by handle, you mean?
I was a dweeb. And I handle was... No, Ralph, please. This is...
I thought we might get a scoop. I didn't know what you were handling.
No, it's not a sexual evening.
It's 18 and over here. We're okay.
Ralph, no, what I had to do was kind of look after Max and see that he got from one city to another, you know, for promotional reasons.
Right.
So while Max was out with his turkey farmer friends raising hell at night, I'd sleep on the motel lawn and wait for him and get him on the airplane the next morning.
So you were his keeper.
Yeah, but he was a wonderful man.
He liked to mix it up in bars and stuff, though, didn't he? Wasn't he kind of a
rabble-rouser? Yes, and his brother Buddy, Buddy Bear, was the actor.
Then the Army called, right? Then the draft board got a hold of you.
Well, I got fired on one day from McClatchy, drafted and accepted into Naval OCS the same day.
Wow.
Yes,
so you had three choices.
A very dramatic, trying day. And I decided I'd be drafted because it was only, you know, like 24 months, 2 years, and go in and serve my time, and, you know, that's it.
What'd you do in the Army? Were you an infantryman? Were you?
They didn't know what to do with me. So what happened, I spent some time at Fort Lewis in Washington, and then they sent me to Camp San Luis Obispo to infantry basic.
Right.
And, any more guys out there like me? But what happened, and I was there, and at the end of basic, they said, I was on the way to Korea, and they said, I'm that age, yeah, and they said, the commanding general would like to see you. Oh, right away. I went to the commanding general of the camp's office, and he said, Private, I understand that you know everything there is to know about movies and television, radio, etc. And I said, yes, sir. And so they made me the guy who started the Army's first television station, closed circuit in California. Then they sent me to New York to do the same thing a year later. But I had a warrant officer with me all the time doing this behind my head. One mistake, Private, then you're out of here.
It's off to Korea. I think we got a picture of you in the Army, too, Adam.
Really?
Here you in your uniform.
Again, a dweeb.
Look
a
at
dweeb.
That. Very sharp.
Look at this. Oh, my. I've got a better haircut tonight.
So you get discharged, and you're in New Jersey, of all places, right?
Yeah.
When you're discharged, you had to find, you had to make a living, you had to find a job. What did you end up doing?
Well, I ended up being a milkman in the mornings and emceeing a show called The Tommy Tucker Show, a music show at night on television.
A milkman. How great would it be to have your milk delivered by Adam West to you every morning?
That's so funny.
Has anyone ever come up to you?
What about your wild turkey?
Has anyone ever come up to you since and said, you know, Adam, you used to bring cream to my front door. Did you...
There was one lady, Ralph. But, you know, I was the only milkman that I ever heard of to get a medal.
A medal?
Sheffield Farms gave me a medal. Said, get out of here, Ken. No, they gave me a medal for delivering milk in a hurricane.
I didn't know there were dairy medals.
Well...
What do they give you, the butter heart? What is the medal? What is the medal the dairy gives you?
Yeah. But, you know, even then, you know, it was like being a superhero, right?
Milkman.
Yes. Yeah. Milkman man.
And once that job was over, you and your wife at the time, Billy, decided to go to Europe, right? Take a trip and see the world?
That's right.
And that was interrupted by a phone call, a very lucky phone call you got from an old college buddy of yours who was in Hawaii at the time, right?
Well, that happened a little after Europe.
Yeah.
We ran out of money within the first week.
It was a short trip.
And so we hitchhiked a lot through Europe with, as I recall, a young Swiss preacher and a girl who had escaped from the commies.
Really?
She escaped from the commies and she crawled under barbed wire for 8 miles and got to me. But, yeah, so then after that we went to New York and Greenwich Village and hung out a little while with some people I knew. And then back to the ranch where I worked. My God, I worked as a cook in a cannery, as a truck driver, and I broke horses and different things. And then I did get a note from this friend of mine in Hawaii with whom I gone to school. And he had become the first morning TV host in the islands. And he was doing extremely well. It was called the Kini Popo Show. Kini Popo in Hawaiian means on the ball. So he said, come over here, and I think maybe you can get a job. And I did.
And you worked on the Kini Popo Show, didn't you?
Yeah, I did that. When he went south, he went to the South Seas and left his show, and he said I could do the show for him if I wanted, and I did, and did that for a year or so, and then go on, Ralph.
I just wanted to bring up your co-star, because not a lot of people know about you and Peaches. You want to tell the nice people about Peaches?
No. I will. Okay, Peaches, I took over the morning show, Kini Popo Show, and we had a chimpanzee named Peaches, who was my co-star.
Yes.
Peaches was wonderful as long as the trainer was there. And then Peaches did unseemly things under my desk. It's not fun working with a chimp.
That's what I've heard.
Right.
I heard they tend to throw their poop.
Well, they...
The monkey, not you. The chimp.
Yes,
chimp.
Throw their poop.
Yes.
And not only that, they can be very ferocious. You know, just rip your clothes off, Ralph.
Was it a female chimp?
No, that was a problem.
Because I've got a picture of you in Hawaii as the host of the Kini Popo show. And I got to tell you, I could see where a female chimp might lose her mind over you. There in the pool.
Yeah. Lovely land.
A lot of cheesecake in that photo right there. You got to know Don Ho in Hawaii, didn't you? Did you guys become friends?
You know, Don Ho passed away not too long ago.
Yeah, I know.
He's the one who sang Tiny Bubble in the Wine.
Yeah. You should record that. If we have some time left over, maybe we could do a couple numbers at the end of the show.
Well, you know, Ralph, strangely enough, I did a thing, kind of a takeoff on Don Ho, on a series that I had briefly. And I did sing Tiny Bubbles with a long black wig.
Then you and Carl, before he left, I guess you started a side business together, right? Didn't you have a little tourism business?
Yes, I did. I learned to fly in Hawaii and had a small airplane. And I had two or three jobs to, you know, get by. It was very expensive. And I hadn't been discovered yet. And what happened was I decided that I would maybe pick up a little extra on the side by greeting tourists at the airport with a lei.
That's flowers we're talking about, right?
Yeah, the flower lei. Yeah. And offer them, you know, a little sightseeing tour by air around the islands.
Great.
You know, I hate to say that I wasn't licensed to do that.
You were flying, but you didn't have a license.
Well, no, I had a license to fly, but not to take people.
Oh, I got you.
And
it would have been much of a business just flying yourself around the islands.
No.
That wouldn't
have
worked.
No, I couldn't have survived.
No. And then something very important happened on one of those flights, right? Didn't you pick up a producer from Hollywood?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he suckered from my... I gave him a card, and he did call me. And I said, sure, I'll be there and come to the airport, blah, blah, blah. And they came out, and I flew him around the islands. And he said, kid, you know, I've produced a few movies in Hollywood. And maybe you ought to come over and give it a crack because I've seen your show. And I said, well, okay. You know, and he said, I'm at MGM. And I said, well, if I ever got a chance to get over there, I was trying to be cool. And sure enough, later on, I did meet him again. But before that, there was a well-known, excuse me.
Sure.
This is... Is that Stolichnaya or no? But
I'll take another two, by the way, while we're drinking. This is the most sober I've ever been on stage.
Soda water. I was doing a play there called Picnic.
Oh, and I remember the William Holden movie.
Yeah, I was playing that role, and what happened was I paid a friend of mine $20. To get some people, a manager and an agent or two off the beach to come see the play. And they did. And after it was over, they said, kid, we can sell you in Hollywood, I think. I said, if you'll take your hand off my thigh. So I had met one of the guys was great, an agent named Lou Sherrill. And he said, send us some pictures on a horse. And he knew that I'd, you know, been on a ranch and different things. And Warner's, ABC and Warner's were collaborating on doing westerns like Maverick and on and on. And I sent him some pictures on a horse dressed like a cowboy. And they said, come on over.
You were married. This is you had your second marriage by then at this point, right?
Yeah, but first let me say, Ralph, that it was hard to find a horse
in Hawaii.
Yeah. And it was hard to find a Western outfit on the beach.
Not a lot of cowboys in Hawaii, I'm guessing.
That's right. So what I did, I found a horse that had been eating some kind of strange berry. And he'd lost most of the hair. And
so you found a horse with mange?
On the rain. Mange on the rain.
My favorites.
But we took a few pictures, and so the agent said, kid, I can sell you to Hollywood. Come on over. So I washed up on the beach in Santa Monica, and one thing led to another, and I got a contract at Warner's.
And as I mentioned, you're with your second wife at this point, who, the mom of Janelle and Hunter. And you take the whole family, you go to Hollywood, and when you became under contract with Warner Brothers, that's when they changed your name, right? It had been William Anderson up to that point.
Well, it had been Billy West Anderson.
Billy West Anderson.
And that was the name of the first movie, Cowboy. So we decided, that's not going to work. And so I decided to use my middle name, and I said, A-D-A-M. How many letters is that?
Four.
Oh, four. Thank you.
That's what I'm here for.
So Adam West, you know, seemed to balance, be okay. So what the hell?
That was kind of common back in the day for actors to change their names, stage names. But is it weird to have gone that long in your life as one name and then suddenly people are calling you something else? I've always wondered, is that strange, having a dual
identity?
It is,
because now you could have the name Orville Meshuggah, whatever.
And keep it.
It's okay.
Yeah.
But then they wanted names like Tab Hunter and Rock Hudson and things like that. I'm much older than I look.
So Warner signs you to a deal. Is it a seven-year contract usually in the studio days?
Yeah.
And what were you making a week? Do you remember what the salary was?
I told the agent, I said, I will sign this contract. And I didn't want to do it because I had a screen test at MGM.
Right.
That they'd arrange the same day. And being a naive kid, I said, gosh, I promised MGM I'd be there. And you're saying that Warner's is offering me a contract? Gee, Lou, I promised MGM I'd be there.
You wanted to be fair.
He said, kid, a bird in hand. So I said, get the most money you can and I'll sign up.
How much a week was it?
Oh, it was incredible. I started for more money than I think anyone under contract had.
And that number would be?
$250 a week.
Wow.
That's good, huh?
That's steak money right there. Oh, you're eating large.
Went through that pretty fast.
And Warner's was doing all these television westerns at the time, right? That was the days of Maverick with James Garner and Roger Moore, I guess, was under contract the same time.
Yes,
you were.
Roger and I signed like the first same day.
Wow.
And I did all of those westerns.
I think we have a shot of you in cowboy gear. I'm assuming this is from the western era. That's a cowboy right there.
One of those phony gallery shots.
Well, just shoot your nose out.
God, I hated those things. Yeah.
You cocking your gun, so to speak.
Don't you pop your gun, Ralph.
And they gave you a Western pilot at Warner's, right? You got to do Doc Holliday.
Yeah, I did. I did Doc Holliday, on Maverick and some other shows. And they said, let's give this kid a chance to do his own series as Doc Holliday, the deadly dentist, right? So I did the pilot, and I played him as an alcoholic. And, you know, I tried to make it realistic. And the word came in from Madison Avenue. What in the hell is he doing? What if this kid kissed his horse? His horse would pass out. He was a consumptive. But, you know, later when they did Doc Holliday, you know, Victor Mature, and then later on,
Val Kilmer did it.
Val Kilmer?
Yeah.
Who also did Batman?
Yeah, you guys share another role.
Follows me everywhere.
He really has just patterned his career after you.
It's terrible.
I've heard he works with a chimp all the time, too, just so he can be more like you. Warner's put you in a movie, too, The Young Philadelphians, right, with Paul Newman.
Yeah, I had a good break there. They said that I could probably cut that.
Paul Newman, Brian Keith, right, also in that?
Yeah.
Brewster?
Yes, I played Paul Newman's, like, illegitimate father.
Yeah, you're supposedly his father.
Yeah, but I wasn't.
You never consummated the relationship
right.
with his mom.
I got very confused.
Yeah, because you had secret yearnings for not women.
No, it was actually a girl who worked in the front office there.
I've got a clip from The Young Philadelphians to show people.
You do?
Little piece of video. This
oh
is Adam
God.
West playing... William Lawrence, I believe, is the character's name.
I don't know, that's like 42 years ago.
Yeah. He's a closeted homosexual.
Oh.
Not Adam, the character, who is marrying this woman because his mother is forcing him to get married to this woman. It's an arranged society marriage.
Would you card them, please?
They're all 18. It's okay.
Oh.
And then this is their wedding night, and William Lawrence recognizes that he's never going to be able to consummate this particular marriage. Let's take a look at the video.
Lovely. Very lovely.
Gail, I want so much to make you happy.
It's a girl.
I can't make you happy. It was my mother who wanted this marriage. To give her a grandson, just as your mother wanted you to be a Lawrence. But I can't love you, Kate. I can't love anyone.
Bill, dear.
Don't pity me!
Bill!
Yeah!
that's drama. Heavy stuff. Heavy,
that's some
heavy.
Drama. Bill runs right out and gets himself killed. How about that?
Yeah. That's what he does.
Then the Warner Brothers contract wasn't renewed, right? There was a point in your career where they said, we're going to say goodbye.
What happened after 1 year? They lost their relationship with ABC.
Right.
And the TV Westerns kind of fell out of favor. So they said, well, I think we're going to let you go. And I said, that's fine because I wanted out anyway. I don't mean to sound strange, but I did. I wanted to freelance.
Sure.
Because somehow I knew that in my future...
Was Happy Hooker Goes to Washington? I'm just wondering. I was guessing. I didn't know what you were going to say. I'm trying to fill in the blanks here. That's what I do.
Why? Why did I come here?
So you do freelance and you start working. You're doing all different kinds of things, including TV commercials.
Yeah.
One for which was Frosted Flakes, which I didn't even know existed until I did research for this particular evening. It's the most charming little commercial on the planet, you and this little girl. I had to bring it in. Here's Adam doing a commercial for Frosted Flakes. And being a new dad myself, it warms my heart watching you with this little actress eating your Frosted Flakes. Here's a piece of video.
Hey, Messy. You hold that spoon like a hammer.
Frosted Flakes.
Frosted Flakes.
Frosted Flakes.
Well, anyway, you hold your spoon right. You'll get more plus Frosted Flakes in your mouth. Okay?
Okay.
How cute is that? Then the detectives came along, right? Robert Taylor's The Detectives.
Yeah.
This was your first recurring role in a TV series, I guess?
Well, except for Maverick.
Oh, right.
But yes. I co-starred with the late Robert Taylor.
Right. And Mark Goddard, right, went on to Lost in Space, of course.
And Tige Andrews. Yeah.
And you guys were all detectives. And I guess week to week, the story's focus would shift on one of you, right?
Is that yes, how it played? We alternated.
And you were Detective Steve Nelson.
Nelson, yes. Yeah.
Here's a shot. Here's a picture of Adam as Detective Steve Nelson from The Detectives.
With a gun.
Oh, your gun's a little smaller in this picture than the Western one.
I'm getting older.
You're going in the wrong direction. You joined that show in the third season, I guess, right? You were on for the whole third season.
Yes, we did. I did 30 hours for NBC.
Wow. Then when that show was over, the work continued to come fast and furiously. Tammy and the Doctor, Soldier in the Rain, Mara of the Wilderness, an Outer Limits episode that's now a classic.
You know, I'd do anything if they called.
Robinson Crusoe on Mars.
Correct.
Was another film. Here's a still from that picture. Robinson Crusoe on Mars. Once again, Adam working with a monkey.
Another monkey.
There's a theme here, Adam, in your career.
Yes.
Seem to end up with a monkey sooner
Leading
or later.
Leading ladies.
Yeah. Then the second marriage ends. You move to Malibu. You got your bachelor pad there. You're off to Italy to do a spaghetti western.
Correct.
As they were called back in the day. Clint Eastwood, I guess, had moved on to do those as well. You did The Relentless Four in Italy, right?
Correct.
And in the States, another one of your commercials apparently was running here while you were over in Italy working. It was a commercial you did for a product called Nestle Quick. For chocolate milk. And you played Captain Q, if I'm not mistaken.
Captain Quick.
Captain Quick, yes. Who was sort of a James Bond spoof, James Bond knockoff.
Yeah.
Here's a little clip from the Nestle Quick, Captain Quick commercial.
I see automation displaces labor in your organization too, Dr. Sloan.
Ah, Captain Q. Join me in a glass of delicious chocolate quick.
Would you? Thank you, Doctor. I could use some energy. Incidentally, one of those torpedoes you fired at me was circling, and you're sunk.
Toodaloo! Thank you!
Some people will do anything to get rich quick. Toodaloo.
Pretty great. It's
pretty great.
Yes. And that led to...
Yeah, there was a guy named William Dozier, I guess, watching television, and he saw that commercial, right?
And drinking lots of Nestle's Quick.
Yes. He saw that commercial, and I guess at the time he was working on a project for ABC and Fox called Batman, I guess it was called, right? And you get a call from your agent, Lou Sherrill, and he says they want to talk to you over at Fox for Batman.
Yep.
Now, you knew the character, right? You read the comics as a kid?
Well, I did, yeah. I found a whole kind of a stack of Batman comics one time in a bunkhouse on the farm. And I sat there and I read about this guy and I said, wow, you know, I'm not into comics so much, but this is really good stuff. And, you know, I just kind of tucked it away that I like Batman.
And the call comes.
And I said, Lou, to the agent, look, I'm trying to have a serious career here. And I was invited back to Europe to do 5 more films. And he said, well, come on out to Fox and meet Bill Dozier and see the folks at ABC and see if you like it. Well, I read that pilot script for Batman, and it called High Diddle Riddle by Lorenzo Semple Jr. I thought it was so funny and wonderful and different that I said, Lou, if they sign me now, I'll do it.
And it happened.
It was that simple because they'd seen that commercial.
Yeah.
And they said, this is the idiot who could play.
If a guy can look cool with a giant rubber ducky inflating around his waist, they knew they could put you in tights and a cape and they were going to be in good hands.
Try that.
Yeah. So they sign you, they have their Batman, and then it comes time to cast Robin. And they say to you, we want you to meet this kid named Sparky and do a screen test together, right?
Yeah, and I said, of course, because, you know, you want the chemistry, right? And so Sparky came in, and we did a test.
And Sparky was Burton Jervis at the time?
Burton Gervis.
Gervis, yeah.
And it really, Burt Ward.
Burt Ward, of course.
Yeah.
I brought in a little piece of the screen test of Adam and Burt on screen for the first time together as Batman and Robin. This is a little taste of them. It's funny because it's sort of a mock-up Batcave. I guess they didn't have the sets ready at the time. And this is you guys working out the Riddler's riddle together in the Batcave. Here's a little tape.
Look, between the lines, when is the time of a clock like the whistle of a train?
When it's 2 to 2. 2, 2, 2.
Right you are.
Holy caboose! Sure. Here's another one. What has neither flesh, bone, nor nail, yet has 4 fingers and a thumb?
A glove.
Roger. 2, 2, 2. A glove.
It's an address.
I get it. 222 Glover Avenue.
You've got it, champ.
The only possible answer. The only possible answer.
Right.
222 Glover Avenue.
Right.
Yes. You guys really worked that out. As you read the script, what a brilliant script, by the way, Lorenzo Semple Jr. put together for that pilot. It was all there on the page, isn't it? The minute you read it, you knew exactly the tone that this show was going to have.
Certainly. And, you know, he had just won the New York Film Critics Award for a screenplay that he'd done. And this is a guy who was a marvelous screenwriter, that he would take on Batman really impressed me. And he set the tone, and we all got kind of married with the same idea and way to do it, tongue-in-cheek, on several levels, and it worked.
Now, we're so familiar with the show now, it's kind of easy to miss that. At the time, this was unlike anything television had ever seen before. There had never been irony on television before. There had never been this kind of color used. There had never been these sort of camera angles used. It was all brand new. ABC must have been scared out of their socks when they saw what you guys were doing.
Well, they were, and so was I. But, you know, we were you're right, Ralph, the first show on twice a week in color. And I remember in the first 2 or 3 weeks of shooting it, I got a lot of memos, and other people did too, from all over the country and the world, really, where people were investing in the show. And they said, what is that kid doing? You know, what? We don't get it. What was he doing? We want him to be like the Lone Ranger. And I said, no, I'm sorry. And I just kept, you know, I was a little scared, but I did it my way. And sure enough, after 2 or 3 weeks, and especially after it aired, they said, let him alone, let him alone, which is the greatest thing, you know, for an actor to have that kind of confidence or endorsement from the studio, from people, to be allowed to do, you know, your own thing with the character.
And you put a lot of work into that characterization as well, right? A lot of people think it's just you put on the mask and you read the lines, but the voice, the attitude, the walk, everything.
Well, yeah, you know, Batman, I figured, you know, in a kind of a comedic way, in a sense, but he was always musing and never still. And if you do it that way, it kind of works. And if, as far as exterior things for an actor, if you use the costume and use it appropriately for the character, the costume brings a lot of things that you can use. And, of course, if you use whatever's around you, little zephyrs in the air, it helps.
And you couldn't see out of that mask practically, right?
What?
You could hardly see out of that cowl when you were moving around.
It was very difficult, Ralph, because the eye slits were small. And your eyes were quite a bit back from the eye holes.
Right.
And I'm a little nearsighted anyway. So it was kind of difficult, but I learned to, thank God I was a top athlete. But I learned to, you know, deal with it, as you would have. By the way, as I look at you this evening, he could have been Bruce Wayne.
Why, thank you, good citizen. That's quite a compliment coming from you.
You got it, Ralph. Ralph, baby.
So ABC does a great job of promoting the show. January 12th, 1966 rolls around. The show premieres. And almost overnight, you go from being a working but relatively unknown actor to the biggest TV star in America. Literally overnight. It was that kind of impact.
Yes.
Well, that's got to be kind of hard to handle. It's got to be a lot to deal with when suddenly your life is turned around like that.
It really was, Ralph. There was a lot of drinking involved.
Good, good. I like to hear that.
Womanizing. No, it's not easy to deal with that instant stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when you become kind of a rock star. And,
you are.
But I worked hard. And I'd go home, have 2 or 3 scotches and a steak and collapse with my scripts and be okay the next day.
In the very first episode, you created sort of an iconic moment. I brought in just a picture of it. You doing the Batusi, by the way. Speaking of work that went into the role. This one image has followed you around your entire life from the very first episode. John Travolta stole it from you later on in life.
Yes, Dirty Red. Yeah.
Quite an iconic moment. And so it's the 60s, and I've been waiting to ask you this question for a long time. We've been friends for a number of years now. But it's the 60s. You're a single guy. You're a good-looking guy. You're the biggest television star in America. What was the women like? What the women, Adam? Just the sheer numbers of women. I can't imagine the women.
I'm getting so excited. Let me describe them.
Ralph, the women, Adam. Let's talk about the women.
You know, when you're young and available, it's difficult many times to, you know, pass by someone who might have some kind of need.
Uh-huh. And you are a do-gooder. So you want to help people in need, right?
Yes.
You were probably just researching the character. You were helping a poor damsel in distress.
Yes, I've been fighting crime wherever I am.
Good man. So demands on your time get enormous. Not only are you working constantly because...
Yes.
No, I'm not talking about the women anymore. I'm talking about work.
Okay.
Demands on your time become enormous because you're shooting the show. I mean, it's basically like shooting an hour series, but you're splitting it up into two halves. So you're shooting an hour show in, what, 10 days? What did it take you to shoot two episodes?
Well, we had 6 or 7 days.
Wow.
Occasionally 9, you know, but...
That's
yeah,
tough.
Yeah, it was tough. We'd do maybe 2 or 3 shows at the same time. And I had a wonderful man who worked with me as an assistant. His name is Milton Stark. And Milton's still around. And Milton used to walk behind me with 2 or 3 scripts that I had marked and opened to certain pages. And all I had to do, he was so good, I just snapped my fingers 1, 2, or 3 times. And he would know which script to open. And if I was dealing with people or doing other things... he'd start reciting lines in my ear quietly. I got a head start that way.
That's great.
You know, some people are able to, what is it, left brain, right brain?
Right.
No brain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's me. I'm the no brain.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. You probably got both halves going at the same time. You got to do personal appearances, too, at this time. You're working on the set. Then you're putting on the costume and doing personal appearances.
Yeah.
All over the world for pretty good money, right?
Yes. They paid me pretty well.
How much money did they pay to do this? I got a personal picture. I got a picture of one of your personal appearances, rather, here. I want to know what this goes for. I think it's you on top of an elephant. I hope you got well paid for that one.
Oh, my circus days. Yeah. Wonderful. Look at the size of that thing.
And the elephant's pretty big, too.